just warn you at the beginning of every program, day and night. In addition, all programs will be interrupted to bring you important bulletins as they're received. Now, here's the news. San Francisco, a spokesman in the office of Captain Kilpatrick, Chief of Staff of the 12th Naval District, said at 8:10 p.m. tonight that 15 unidentified planes had been sighted a few miles off the Golden Gate and that naval forces at that time were trying to intercept them. The London Daily Telegraph reports the Philippine west coast town of Iba has been raided by Japanese planes. Iba is 70 miles northwest of Manila. The Daily Telegraph dispatch says there were 100 casualties. We thank the sponsor of this program for relinquishing a portion of his time in order that you might hear the latest news from the NBC newsroom.
Story Dramas, brought to you by Nelson Olmsted. NBC presents the outstanding narrator, Nelson Olmsted, another of his story dramas. Tonight, from a collection of short stories by America's famous satirical humorist, Dorothy Parker, Nelson Olmsted has selected one of her best stories entitled Horsey. Here is Nelson Olmsted.
When young Mrs. Gerald Kruger came home from the hospital, Miss Wilmoth came along with her and the baby. Miss Wilmoth was an admirable trained nurse with a real taste for arranging flowers, of which Camilla Kruger received so many. Sometimes when the nurse opened the shiny boxes and carefully grouped the cards, there would be a curious expression upon her face. Playing over shorter features, it might have been one of wistfulness. Upon Miss Wilmoth, it served to perfect the strange resemblance that she'd borne through the years. Her face was truly complete with that look of friendly melancholy peculiar to the gentle horse. She was tall, pronounced of bone and erect of carriage. Her long face was innocent, indeed ignorant of cosmetics, and its color stayed steady. Confusion, heat, or haste caused her neck to flush crimson. Her mild hair was pinned with loops of nicked black wire into narrow knots, practical to support her little high cap. She had big, trustworthy hands, scrubbed and dry, with nails cut short and so deeply cleaned with some sharp instrument that the ends stood away from the spatulate fingertips. Gerald Kruger, who nightly sat opposite her at his own dinner table, tried not to see her hands. It irritated him to be reminded by the sight that they must feel like straw matting and smell of white soap. For him, women who were not softly lovely were simply not women. It was a chore for him, certainly, to have to dine with her every evening, and one that did not ease with repetition, but there was no choice. Everyone had always heard of trained nurses bristling insistence they not be treated as servants. Miss Wilmoth could not be asked to dine with a maid. So Gerald dined each night with Miss Wilmoth. The small dread of this hour with her struck suddenly at him in the afternoon. On his way home from his office, he found grim entertainment in rehearsing his table talk and plotting desperate innovations to it. Kruger's compulsory conversations, lesson one, a dinner with Miss Wilmoth, a trained nurse. Good evening, Miss Wilmoth. Well, and how are the patients all day? That's good. That's fine. Well, the baby gained 2 ounces, did she? That's fine. Yes, that's right. She will be before we know it. That's right. Well, Mrs. Kruger seems to be getting stronger every day, doesn't she? That's good. That's fine. Well, I see where they held up the jeweler shop right in broad daylight in Fifth Avenue. Yes, I certainly don't see what we're coming to. That's right. Well, I see the cat. Do you see the cat? The cat is on the mat. It certainly is. Well, pardon me, Miss Wilmoth, but must you look so much like a horse? Do you like to look like a horse, Miss Wilmoth? That's good. Miss Wilmoth, that's fine. You certainly do, Miss Wilmoth. That's right. Well, will you, for heaven's sake, finish your oats, Miss Wilmoth, and let me get out of it? Every evening, he reached the dining room before Miss Wilmoth and stared gloomily at the silver and candle flame until she was upon him. There she would be, set for a ritual of evening cheer.
Well, Mary,
he would cry to the waitress,
you know what they say, better late than never.
But no smile would mellow Mary's lips and no light her eyes. Once or twice, Gerald saw a strange expression upon Miss Wilmoth's face as she witnessed the failure of her attic with the maid. He could not quite classify it, though he didn't know. It was the look she sometimes had when she opened the shiny white boxes and lifted the exquisite scentless blossoms that were sent to Camilla. Anyway, whatever it was, it increased her equine resemblance to such a point that he thought of offering her an apple.
Mercy, she would say. My goodness, Mercy, why, I had no idea it was so late. Well, you mustn't blame me, Mr. Kruger. Don't scold me. You'll just have to blame that daughter of yours. She's the one that keeps us all busy. Just you wait. You're the one that's going to be kept busy when the bow starts to come.
Yes, guess that's right, Gerald would say. And he would essay a small laugh and fail at it. It made him uncomfortable, somehow embarrassed him to hear Miss Wilmot's banter of swains and conquests. It was as unseemly as rouge would have been as unseemly in her long mouth. He would hurry over to her own ground. Well, he would say, well, and how are the patients all day? But that, even with the baby's weight and the list of the day's visitors, seldom lasted past the soup. Doesn't that woman ever go out, he asked Camilla. Doesn't our horsey ever raid a night off?
Well,
where would she go? Camilla said. Her low, lazy words had a trick of seeming a little weary of the subject. Well, she might take herself a moonlight canter around the park.
Oh, she doubtless gets a thrill out of dining with you. You're a man, they tell me. And she can't have seen so many. Poor old horse. She's not such a bad soul.
Yes. Well, what a round of pleasure it is, having dinner every night with not a bad soul. Each evening, Gerald came home early enough to have a while with Camilla before dinner. He made his cocktails in her room and watched her as she slowly drank one. Miss Wilmot was in and out, touching flowers, patting pillows. Sometimes she brought Diane in on display, and those would be minutes of real discomfort for Gerald. He could not bear to watch her with the baby in her arms, so acute was his vicarious embarrassment at her behavior. She would bring her long head down close to Diane's tiny, stern face and toss it back again, high on her rangy neck, all the while the strange words in a strange high voice came from her.
Well, her was a beautiful girl, that sure was. Her was, that sure was.
And she would bring the baby over to him.
See, Daddy, isn't that a great big girl? Isn't that beautiful? Say night-night, Daddy. I'm too sleepy by now. Say night-night.
Oh, Lord. Once, he tore his gaze from Camilla to look at Miss Wilmot, surprised by the sudden cessation of her falsetto. She was no longer lowering her head and tossing it back. She was standing quite still, looking at him over the baby. She looked away quickly, but not before he'd seen that curious expression on her face again. It puzzled him, made him vaguely uneasy. That night, she made no further exhortations to Diane's parents to utter the phrase, night-night. In silence, she carried the baby out of the room and back into the nursery. One evening, Gerald brought two men home with him, lean, easily dressed young men, good at golf and squash rackets. They had cocktails in Camilla's room, grouped about the chaise lounge. Miss Wilmot, standing in the nursery adjoining, testing the temperature of the baby's milk against her wrist, could hear them all talking lightly and swiftly. Now and again, she could distinguish Camilla's lazy voice. The others stopped immediately when she spoke. When she was done, there were long peals of laughter. Miss Wilmot pictured her lying there in golden chiffon and deep lace. Her light figure turned always a little away from those about her, so that she must move ahead and speak her slow words over her shoulder to them. The trained nurse's face was astoundingly equine as she looked at the wall that separated them. Well, even though the dinner hour was delayed that evening, Miss Wilmot was a trifle late. Mr. Kruger and his two friends were standing in the dining room, talking all at once and laughing all together. They stopped their noise when Miss Wilmot entered, and Gerald moved forward to perform the introduction. He looked at her and then looked away. Prickled embarrassment tormented him. He introduced the young men, with her eyes away from him. She sat down at the candlelit table with the three beautiful young men. Her usual evening vivacity was gone from her. In silence, she unfolded her napkin and took up her soup spoon. Her neck glowed crimson, and her face, even with its powder, looked more than ever as if it should have been resting over the top rail of a paddock fence. There was no laughter during dinner. Well, Miss Wilmot stayed with the Cougars for 5 weeks. Camilla was pronounced well, so well that she could have died downstairs in the last few nights in Miss Wilmot's stay, had she been able to support the fardle of dinner at the table with the trained nurse.
I really couldn't dine opposite that page, she told Gerald. You go amuse Horsey at dinner. You must be good at it by now.
All right, I will, darling. But God keep me when she asks for another lump of sugar from holding it out to her on my palm.
Only 2 more nights, and then Thursday, Nana will be here to take over, so don't worry.
Only 2 more nights. Gerald went down to dinner, singing a good old tune. The old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be. She ain't what she used to be. She ain't what she used to be. And on the final dinners with Miss Wilmot, were like all the others. But Gerald was elated all the day of Miss Wilmot's departure. He had a holiday feeling, a last day of school jubilation, with none of its faint regret. He left his office early, stopped at the florist shop, and went home to Camilla. Nana was installed in the nursery, but Miss Wilmot had not yet left. She was in Camilla's room. Obviously, she was in the middle of embarrassment to farewell. The melancholy of her face made it look so much like a horse that the hat above it was preposterous.
Why,
There's Mr. Kruger, she cried.
Oh, good evening, Miss Wilmot, he said. Hello, darling. How are you, sweet? You like these? He laid a florist box in Camilla's lap, and she gave a little squeal at the sight of it. And these are for you, Miss Wilmot, he said. He made himself face her and hold out to her a square, smaller box.
Why, Mr. Kruger, for me, really? Why, really, Mr. Kruger?
She opened the box and found four gardenias with green foil and pale green ribbon holding them together. She was so genuinely amazed and pleased that she couldn't speak. Later, he took her pasteboard hat box and the florist box and followed her down the stairs, out to the automobile at the curb. The chauffeur stood at the open door. Gerald was glad of that presence.
Well, good luck, Miss Wilmot, and thank you so much. Oh, thank you, Mr. Kruger. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed it all the time I've been here. I never had a pleasanter day. And the flowers and everything. I just don't know what to say. I'm the one that ought to thank you.
She held out her hand in a brown cotton glove. Anyway, worn cotton was easier to touch than dry, corded flesh. It was the last moment of her. She scarcely minded looking at the long face and the red, red neck.
Well, you got everything? Well, good luck again, Miss Wilmot, and don't forget it. Oh, I won't. I won't do that.
She turned from him and got quickly into the car to sit upright against the pale gray cushions. The chauffeur placed her hat box at her feet and the florist box in the seat beside her. Closed the door smartly and returned to his wheel. But she looked back through the little rear window. He had already disappeared in the house. He must have run across the sidewalk, run to get back to the fragrant room and the little yellow roses in Camilla. The little pink baby would be lying sleeping in his bed. And they would be alone together. They would dine by candlelight. Always she would be perfect in scented chiffon and deep lace. There would be lean, easy young men to listen to her drawl and give her laughter. Every day there would be shiny white boxes for her, filled with curious blooms. It was perhaps fortunate that no one looked in the limousine. A beholder must have been startled to learn that a human face could look as much like that of a weary mare as did Miss Wilmot's. Presently, the car swerved in the turn of the traffic. The florist box slipped against Miss Wilmot's knee. She looked at it. Then she took it on her lap, raised the lid a little, and peeked at the waxy white bouquet. It would have been all fair then for a chance spectator. Miss Wilmot's strange resemblance was not apparent as she looked at her flowers. They were her flowers. A man had given them to her. She had been given flowers. They may not fade for days. And she could keep the box.
This has been Dorothy Parker's short story, Horsey, as presented by Nelson Almsted.
Well, just time to say that Wednesday night, the story is by one of our best-known modern authors, Robert E. Sherwood. Be with us to hear Extra, Extra. Until Wednesday night, good night and good reading.
NBC presents the outstanding narrator, Nelson Almsted, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the same time. This is the National Broadcasting Company.